Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
A tournament with a top-tier team of rugby experts, including Ben Kay, Rachel Burford, George North, Gordon Darcy, and Chris Patterson. Kicking off this Saturday with Scotland versus Tonga, followed by Wales versus the All Blacks. Touch and engage for the 2021 Autumn Nations Series, exclusively on TalkSport and TalkSport 2.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
Women's Football Weekly with Shabana Hearn and leading guests from the world of women's football.
Cuts back onto her right foot and finds the net!
On TalkSport 2.
Hello there. Good evening. Happy Monday to you. I hope all is well where you are. I hope you had a fabulous weekend and welcome to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. What a week for the international super sub. Beth Mead making history, becoming the first English women's player to score a hat-trick at Wembley, all inside 14 minutes.
And Mead, that is special. And that's how you make an impact. She produces the spectacular here with her first touch of the game.
Northern Ireland, they did put on a brave performance, but just couldn't hold out against England's physicality and reinforcements from the bench.
They beat us through their athleticism and their stronger bench.
The wait to find out who will be England's permanent captain continues, though, as Serena Wiegmann leaves the door open to Lucy Bronze and Steph Houghton.
We haven't had Steph and the other ones and Lucy Bronze in our group, and they've captained this team before. We just take a little time, and when everyone performs well, is fit, I can see how everyone relates and what's best for the team.
Yeah, but Leah Williamson doing such a good job. We're also going to be chatting about the latest on FIFA's plans for the biennial World Cup and hearing from Scotland international Leanne Crichton and Northern Ireland's Rebecca Holloway will be with us as well. This is Women's Football Weekly, National Radio's only dedicated women's football show.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers.
Hi, I'm Jordan Nobbs and you're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2.
So hope you're having a good weekend. Hope you've enjoyed your weekend, whatever it is you've been up to. Alongside me tonight from Aston Villa, defender who won 70 caps for England, Anita Asante is with us this evening. Good evening, Anita. How are you?
Good evening, Shaban. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. So you play with my sister at Aston Villa, and I was saying, oh, Anita's on the show tonight, and she's like, it's Neats, right? It's Neats. You can't be calling her Anita, but we're using your Sunday name, okay?
Perfect. We're being good.
Listen, Anita, actually just heard you on TalkSport just before we came live on the show, doing a lovely package and an interview for Black History Month, and it was really nice just hearing that before we come on live tonight. You won the quadruple in 2007. I think it's one of those things that was such a long time ago as well, but you are, you know, one of those players who did that. You know, do you ever think that quite soon it'll be coming back to the UK?
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think the game here has evolved massively. You know, we've got such a wealth of talent now. But of course, when I look back to that time, I just have, you know, immense fond memories, really. And, you know, it's nice to be part of a team that created history for our country as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also another thing that I picked up on as well was your role models in sport being the Williams sisters in tennis.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that was around my time growing up, and they sort of, you know, took the tennis world by storm. And for me, you know, I just thought they were very unapologetic, you know, with the way they approach their game and, you know, the athleticism and just everything about them, you know, their sort of demeanor on court and their style as well and their hairstyles. Yeah. I was, you know, enamored by all of that.
Yeah, no, it was really, really lovely to hear. And you can hear that on TalkSport as well. Anita, we've got lots to get through tonight because it's been a busy week with the international break for the World Cup qualifiers. Shall we start with England against Northern Ireland? Let's do that because it was England's first competitive game back at Wembley, 23,000 in attendance. England had 34 shots and 11 on target. Now, three of them coming from Beth Mead. Now, let's start with Beth because coming on from the bench in the second half and to get a hat-trick in 14 minutes is just, it's, I mean, she's on another level at the moment.
Yeah, I think Beth Mead is absolutely on fire for both club and country. And, you know, she obviously had a little setback last year and not being involved with the national team for a little while, but has definitely taken the opportunity full throttle and shown her quality and, you know, marking it by a hat-trick, the first woman to do so, is an incredible feat. And it's great, obviously, for England and another problem for the head coach to have, a good one.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, Serena Wagman, it seems to have fallen into place for her since she's come in and, you know, they're on this kind of unstoppable mode at the moment. And of course, Leah Williamson from Arsenal, Arsenal defender, seems to be at the helm at the moment with Lucy Bronze and Steph Houghton out with injuries. Do you think that she is the answer to captain this side moving forward? Or do you think that Steph and Lucy still have a lot more to give in that role?
Well, I think the manager, Sarah Wiegman, has given a lot of confidence to the fact that she trusts Leah Williamson to take on that role and responsibility. And so far, she's done a great job. And it could be a nod to the future as well, you know, by just giving her experience in this moment of time when, you know, when that baton is passed down. But I still think, you know, Steph and Lucy, with their experience and, you know, they've been there, done it at the highest level as well, still have a lot to offer in that role. And so I can understand why she wants to give more time to that decision and also allow someone like Leah, who is, you know, playing fantastically well for her club, to sort of also have pressure off in a different way, you know, focus on herself, focus on her own performances and growing into this England senior side as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, is it something with Leah's age? You know, she's still a young person, and she is doing so well at the moment. But is that something that she would need to take more experience and then move forward, or maybe watching the girls if they come back into that role? Would that help her?
Well, I think Leah expressed it perfectly the other day that she just feels, you know, honoured to be able to take on the role and do the best job she can right now. And, you know, she's not seen that as something that she's been chasing because ultimately, you know, her focus will be to make sure that she gets a starting shirt for England on a regular and consistent basis. I'm sure that's where her focus is. And she knows that they can rely on her if need be in that role. But of course, like I said, you still got Steph and Lucy Bronze to come into the squad with, you know, yes, they're slightly older and they've slightly got more experience as well, which would just allow, you know, that kind of cohesiveness within the group where they have that familiarity with those leaders as well.
Okay. Let's talk about Northern Ireland as well, Anita, because, you know, to hold off the first half, defend the way they did, their goalkeeper, you know, performing very well, Jackie Burns. What was your thoughts on their performance?
Yeah, I was impressed with their first half. Like you said, I thought they were very disciplined and dogged. They worked really hard for each other, you know, especially in and around their box. Last ditch defending. The goalkeeper made, you know, a couple of fantastic saves as well. And they gave themselves the best chance they could to stay in the game for as long as possible, which is you get to half time with a clean sheet. Of course, England, the way they are on the ball in possession, very patient in their play, you know, was probably just waiting for a matter of time of just wearing them down, making them tired for those spaces to open up as they did in the second half.
So moving into tomorrow night, it's Latvia. How do you see this one playing out? Is this one in the bag already, shall we say?
Well, yeah, you never want to go into too overconfident or even complacent. I think, you know, they will definitely want to approach the game in a professional manner like they have all the other qualifying matches. But, you know, I expect them to meet similar opposition in terms of what they've met already in North Macedonia. Mm. And so, you know, it's going to be another kind of, I would imagine, training exercise for England, and maybe another opportunity for the coach to put in some other players as well and have a look at what they have to offer.
Well, let's hear from the England manager now. Serena Wiegman said she was happy with the performance and knew England's patience would pay off.
Of course, I'm very happy with this win. I think in the beginning it was a pretty hard game because they dropped deep very very far. We knew that, of course. And so we created a lot of chances and we just had to keep patient to create even more chances and score the goal. And finally we did. We brought some new players on the pitch and they made a difference. So that's really good that you see that this team has depth, can play very well. But if we need to change or have to bring some new energy, that's really good too. So I'm really happy with this team accomplishment.
And let's focus on Northern Ireland as well. A very strong performance. And manager Kenny Shields said he was proud of his side's resilience and believes his team had England worried at the start of the second half.
At 0-0, they were worried because the first 15 minutes of the second half, we were threatening spasmodically. And there was occasions when we had two chances at the back post and we just couldn't. We weren't clinical enough in that area, and you could see their strength and power that they had, and I felt that we can't disagree with the final outcome of 4-0. We can't disagree with that. We showed a lot of courage, and I felt for the first hour, I wouldn't say we were comfortable, but we negated everything they threw at us, and then they score with a fluke across, and that was it. You know, that was it. The bench, the players from the bench were too strong, too quick, and there wasn't much we could do about it.
Kenny Shields there, Northern Ireland manager. And join us now, Anita, on the phone with us. We've got Birmingham City defender Rebecca Holloway, who had to drop out of Northern Ireland squad due to injury. Good evening, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very, very well, thanks. As I said, Anita is with us as well. And we've just got lots of questions for you. And basically starting with how gutted you must have been to miss out on this opportunity to play at Wembley on Saturday.
Oh, don't. I was absolutely gutted. I think it was one of the hardest things I've had to face so far in my career. I've been fortunate enough to never have an injury that's put me out or stop me from playing, so this was the first time, and I think it was really hard to like come to terms with, especially the fact that it was going to be at Wembley as well. I think it's every player's dream to play at a stage like that, and to miss out on that was, yeah, I was absolutely gutted.
Oh, I'm sorry, but you were there to watch the game, and you know, you yeah. heard the Northern Ireland fans that travelled over as well. My grannies, my nannies from Northern Ireland, my mum's side as well. So you know, I'm torn over this one. I think I was supporting Northern Ireland to the weekend as well as Scotland. So yeah, no, it was a shame to see you miss out. And after you know, an impressive season so far in your time at Birmingham City, we wish you a speedy recovery and hope you're back into the international tournament very, very soon. But let's focus on the squad. That first half was something special from Northern Ireland.
Yeah, no, it was. And I mean, to keep a team like England at 0-0 for 45 minutes, like, says a lot. And the girls put in such a big shift. And I thought, if we can keep it 0-0 throughout the whole game, or even just get something, if we get even just one chance and can put it away and take some points from it, that would be great, because the girls were doing so good first half.
Absolutely. Anita, you want to ask Rebecca a question.
Yeah, Rebecca, how do you think the experience of playing at Wembley in front of a crowd that size will have impacted the team going forward for, you know, the Euros next year as well?
Oh, massive. I think not even just playing at Wembley. I think ever since Northern Ireland started getting results and even just making it to the Euros, our fans have just like grown and grown. And I mean, they just announced today that they sold out for the game against Austria tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show that our fan base is just growing every time. And the fact that they traveled over to Wembley as well, and there were so many of them, just goes to show like the support that we have behind us.
I think that's important as well, Rebecca, the support that you're bringing with you and the Northern Ireland fans travelling over. But this is a huge event for Northern Ireland, and the, you know, looking ahead to next year and going to the Euros, you know, that is massive. Republic of Ireland aren't going, Scotland aren't going, little Northern Ireland is going, and you're just gathering that momentum with the fans coming along with you. That will hopefully push you through this qualifying stage for the World Cup as well. We need to talk about Northern Ireland's situation being different as well, because not all members of that team are full time. Is that still the case?
Yeah, there is actually something that's going to be implemented, though, hopefully soon, that's going to make the girls full-time. I know the IFA are really pushing for that, and, like, Kenny, that's a really big thing for him. Because I think, yeah, for the Euros next year in the preparation, he's wanting pretty much all the players to be full-time to obviously prepare us as best as we can. So that is definitely something that not only the coaches have pushed, but I think even the older players like Rachel Furness, Sarah Mack, they've pushed for that as well, even though they are full-time in the championship themselves. I think they want that for the younger girls coming through, which I think is great coming from not only the coaches but the players.
When is that expected to be happening then, Rebecca?
I think hopefully starting as soon as possible, really, hopefully this year. If not going into the start of next year. But yeah, I mean, I think it's something that's going to happen pretty soon. It's still a bit in the works, but it's definitely something that's going to happen.
Anita, I have to ask you as well, just listening to Rebecca talking about, you know, a squad that are going to a country that's going to the Euros and so many, many members of their squad not being full-time professionals. What does that make you think about the women's game at the moment?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously it shows that we don't have the same level of parity across nations and obviously domestically at some clubs, and that, you know, we still need to work towards that to give these athletes like Rebecca the best chance of competing at the highest level. But, you know, what I would say is, you know, and I'd say to Rebecca, and she must feel this, that after seeing the performance that your squad put on the other day, it must fill you with great sense of confidence that, you know, you can get so much more out of your group if you did turn pro and you got, you know, full-time players.
It would worry the rest of the groups, actually, if Northern Ireland, all of those players did turn fully professional. Well, that is another country that are really then going to, you know, blaze a trail, Rebecca, because you've got a lot of key players in that squad who are doing it without being professional. You must be really proud knowing that soon that might change.
Oh, yeah, massively. And I think one of the young players, Rebecca McKenna, she is an example of that progress from going part-time to full-time. I mean, the performance she put in against England was probably like one of my player of the match that night. And she used to be part-time and she's now moved to Lewes, which is full-time. And she's honestly come on so much since doing that. And I just think that she's an example for that. So it just goes to show that once you go from that kind of part-time environment into a full-time environment, the difference it can make. And I just think the girls will have so much more to give when that change happens.
100%. It still gets under my skin a little bit that they're not professional yet. But, you know, the change is coming. That's the main thing. You know, progress has been made. Birmingham City and Northern Ireland defender Rebecca Holloway, we wish you a speedy recovery and back to match fitness as soon as possible. Thank you so much for your time tonight, OK?
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
And bring on the Euros as well. It's a huge deal for Northern Ireland. They're definitely the ones to watch at the moment. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. My name's Siobhana here, and I hope you're having a good one. Aston Villa defender Anita Asante alongside me tonight as well. And coming up, we're going to be focusing on Scotland with a midfielder and former international Leanne Crichton on the way next on TalkSport 2.
TalkSport 2, official broadcast partner of the EFL.
Women's Football Weekly with Siobhana Hearn.
She's around the goalkeeper and has rolled it in!
On TalkSport 2.
Hello, happy Monday evening to you. Hope you're having a good one. This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the only show on national radio dedicated to women's football. My name's Siobhana Hearn. In for Faye Carruthers for the next wee while. A former England defender, Anita Asante, is with me tonight. And don't forget, if you miss any of our shows or you want to listen again, our podcast is available on the TalkSport app. So you can download today, swipe left, find us, and boom, off you go. So we caught up with England's match winner, Beth Mead, on how she bounced back from the disappointment of not making the Team GB just a short while ago.
mentally, I think it was good for me to get the time off during the Olympics, in terms of obviously because I wasn't going, and I just, you know, have come back with a don't care attitude. I've put my head down in training, I've worked hard, and I'm kind of getting my rewards on the pitch right now, so I wouldn't change anything I'm doing right now. Obviously there's always pressure on consistency of performing, but at the moment I'm thriving in it, and hopefully I can continue that throughout my season.
England's Beth Mead there. And you also have to wonder as well how Hege Riis, former GB coach who left Beth out of her squad, feels about our bit of, you know, Beth's rebirth this season. You know, did leaving her out of the squad spur her on, or did she just not rate her? Either way, has Beth Mead heard from her ex-manager?
On making history, I actually haven't heard anything from Hege. I haven't heard anything from her since she told me I wasn't going to an Olympics. So, not that I had the expectation to, but yeah, still not heard anything on any type of level. But still proud of what I've done and how I've reacted to how, you know, I dropped out of the Olympic team.
Anita Asante with me tonight as well. Anita, when you listen to that, Beth Mead, and not hearing from the manager who left her out, is that something that makes you think she deserves, or is that something we just move on and crack on and you don't look back?
Yeah, well, I think it's very individual, you know. I think if a player feels that they want some questions answered, then of course you'd like to hear from the coach that, you know, dropped you. And in this instance, you know, if she didn't have that conversation when she was told initially that she wasn't included, then of course you're going to feel a little bit disappointed that you've not been able to really have that in-depth conversation. But I think the way she's handled it is very professional, and it shows just kind of the elite mentality that she has, that she's just gone away, worked on her game, worked on herself, had that mental break, and has come back probably better than she was beforehand.
Have you ever had that, Anita, with a manager where you felt that you're falling out of favour and you've had to work that extra bit harder just to kind of get back into a squad?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most players' careers go in ebbs and flows, depending on your club, the management, sometimes the coaches change, the playing style might change, and all of those things. And it's about adapting and evolving to your environment, and also trusting the process, trusting your ability. You know, the key is to have that self-confidence and not doubt yourself too much, and go away and hopefully you'll get the rewards for your hard work and the consistency that you put into training and in matches.
Yeah, and fair play to Beth Mead. I mean, she really is 2.0 at the moment and going to another level. So long may that continue for her for the rest of the season. Now let's chat about one of our other home nations' performance, Scotland. Scotland beaten Hungary 2-1 on Friday, thanks to a late winner from Rachel Corsi. Here now, former Scotland and Glasgow City midfielder Leanne Crichton. Good evening, Leanne. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good evening, Siobhan.
Good afternoon. Are you on delay?
I am. I've spent the last 3 hours stuck in a computer. So, yeah, I'm just catching up with the day.
Well, good to have you with us tonight. Let's talk about Scotland's performance against Hungary, because it was Christy Grimshaw who got the opener for Scotland and then Hungary equalised. And it was thanks to your best mate, Rachel Corsi, that we won in the end. How pivotal was she in that game?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge moment. It probably won't go down as one of the best performances, I don't think, that the girls have produced over the last number of campaigns. But certainly, I don't think that'll matter when they look back in this campaign. I think the huge moment is going to be the 3 points, and certainly that goal from Rachel topped it off. I was at Hampden, and yeah, it was a tough night for whatever reason. I don't think they hit the heights that, you know, I think I know that they can achieve and certainly produce, but ultimately that goal is a massive moment in the campaign so far.
Yeah, you're right, and it's the 3 points that matters, and on we go into tomorrow night against Sweden. Now, watching Sweden against Republic of Ireland just last week, they looked very, very strong, very tidy, and ranked number 2 in the world as well. So going up against Scotland, what have they got to do tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a completely different game. You know, Hungary were a tough opponent on Friday night, but certainly Sweden are going to offer something completely different. And I think at this stage of Pedro Martínez Losa's reign as Scotland manager, it's something that he needs to, I think, expose the players to in that group. We'll take a hell of a lot from the challenge tomorrow night. You know, they're a high-calibre opponent. It's going to be a quicker game. You're going to be up against individual quality in every aspect of the team performance. So the girls will need to adapt. I think you'll need to see a kind of collective group performance from them. I would imagine that they're going to be out of possession for a huge spell in the game, but I think that can breed confidence in the group. I think they'll need to work hell of a hard across the pitch, but what will give is an opportunity for Pedro to see a different side of his team, and certainly, you know, that will move them forward, because it's been a really quick turnaround since he's come in, and they've been faced with a couple of tough matches to get through just now. But certainly the friendly opens up an opportunity for him to see different players and maybe different positions, because I don't think he yet knows what his strongest 11 is.
Yeah, exactly. Anita Asante here. Anita, you got a question for Leanne?
Yeah, hi Leanne.
Hi,
would you say, how has Pedro sort of, you know, impacted the playing style for Scotland now?
I think just now it's tough to possibly see. You know, I speak to the group, and, you know, certainly having Rachel Corson in there as one of my friends, you know, I'm always picking our brains. Is it different from the setup, you know, under the previous manager? What's changed? And I think, if anything, what, you know, I can take from it is that the players just seem to be enjoying the new vibrant approach. I think a lot of it's possession-based football. You can see in the way that they try and build the game. Certainly, you know, Lisa Robertson on Friday night was dropping very deep, you know, splitting between those two centre-backs, looking to try and build the game. The full-backs are pushing on higher. I think when you listen to Erin Cuthbert speaking last week, she spoke about the attacking style of play, you know, how much they were enjoying that, attacking in numbers, looking to get forward. So I think there's a lot of positivity, you know, within the playing style, but that won't happen overnight. And, you know, what he's looking to try and achieve within the group takes teams, you know, sometimes 2, 3, 4 years to go and create that. So to think that he would achieve it in only, you know, 2 or 3 training camps that he's had with the players is unrealistic. But I think the signs are positive. What's more important just now, though, and Anita, you'll know that as well, you need to win games in qualifying campaigns. Ultimately, you don't get time to adjust and adapt. And the calendar, the way it is now, you don't really get too many friendly games now either in the women's schedule. It's really busy. It's really competitive. And the girls need to keep producing, you know, every game. That's why tomorrow is, you know, a great opportunity to go and try things out.
Absolutely, Leanne. And just one thing quickly I want to mention is that we're without Kim Little now in our Scotland national team, and she's such a huge loss to the squad. Do you feel that they're adapting without her?
Yeah, she is a huge loss, and ultimately you will never replace Kim Little within that group. So the balance for me on Friday, maybe in the midfield, just lacks that adaptation and something different within it just now. And there's new players coming in that are really trying to stamp their authority. What it takes away is maybe Erin Cuthbert higher up in the number 9, which I quite like Erin higher up the pitch like that. So, no, Pedro certainly gets his work cut out to try and find a balance and a replacement for a Kim Little, because I don't think any team that she's blessed or presence with yet have managed to find that when she's departed.
I still find it a wee bit sad that we're not going to see Kim back in a Scotland shirt leading our country. It's a bit of a shame. Former Scotland international Leanne Crichton, thank you so much for your time tonight. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Siobhan.
Thank you. This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. My name's Siobhan. Anita Asante here as well. And coming up next, we're going to be discussing the latest on FIFA's plans for the biennial Women's World Cup.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello, good evening. Hope you're having a good Monday. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. My name's Siobhana Hearn. Alongside me tonight, Aston Villa defender Anita Asante is here. Anita, we need to talk about the Biennial World Cup. Now, have you got it in your locker to have another World Cup, then the Euros, then the Olympics, all in that short space of time? I mean, really, Anita, is it not just a little bit much, even the prospect of that?
Well, I definitely don't have that in my locker anymore. But but yeah, I just think for me personally, I just wonder if it's financially motivated. And I question whether they, you know, FIFA is considered the mental and physical well-being of players. I just don't understand how they're going to manage that in such a congested football calendar. And also, I just think it waters down the impact of a tournament which is supposed to be a showpiece event. So personally, I'm not for it at all.
Well, what's happened is two-time World Cup winner Jill Ailes, who's a member of FIFA's technical advisory group, spoke to media last week to update on the latest on the plans to move the World Cup to a biennial event. So with us now to discuss the latest on this is The Telegraph's women's football reporter Tom Garry. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, hi. Good evening, Siobhan. Good evening, Anita, as well. Hi. Nice to speak to you both.
Lovely to have you, Tom. So it's all kind of kicked off again because in this press conference, Jill Ailes kind of alluded to the fact that this it's not going away. It's not a foregone conclusion and it's going to go to a vote whether this will happen or not.
That's correct, yes. And I sense the tone had really shifted last week from Jill Ailes. Around a month ago when she was appointed into this role to lead this technical advisory group, her phrase of words was along the lines of that she had an open mind and she wasn't ruling things out and she was going to discuss the biennial World Cup possibility. And then when she spoke last week, although she still hasn't made any decisions, she was very much framing it around trying to talk about the positives of the biennial World Cup and what she thought it could do for the sport. I just sensed that the tone had really shifted and the implication was that that was certainly the proposal that she and the technical advisory group were set to put forward for wider consultation. And it's going to be a really divisive issue because already we know UEFA are very opposed to the idea. And I sense the European leagues in particular and the European clubs think it'll be very damaging to the women's game. So I think we've not heard the last of this at all.
Yeah, and what Jill Ailes actually said in this interview is the lever that the Women's World Cup holds in terms of elevating our sport is massive, and that's why the Biennial Women's World Cup isn't in conversation, because we recognise that domestically there's a benefit. Viewership comes up after a major world event. Leagues have been started, players have been discovered. There's so many positives that come from a World Cup. This is a democracy, and this is going to a vote ultimately. So reading that line and that paragraph, you know, makes me think, all right, she's all for this then. So talk to us about these advisors who are also on this kind of this with her, and are they the people who will vote?
No, this is a group of 21 big names from around the sport who Jill Ailes has been talking to gather different opinions from experts on this, not just about the Biennial World Cup, but about the entire international women's football calendar. Because for those who aren't aware, listening, the Women's International Calendar has no date set beyond the 2023 World Cup at the moment. So everything is kind of on the table beyond 2023. So that's things like how frequently we have international windows for qualifiers and friendlies and how frequently we have the tournaments as well. And this panel is made up of some huge names, some very respected names, like Alex Morgan is on a list of lots of players who are on the group. Wendy Renard from France, the Chelsea coach Emma Hayes is there, as well as legends like Kelly Smith, Christine Lilly. But it is quite player heavy, and I know from speaking to people at clubs and leagues around Europe, there's a lot of anger that they feel that. Sort of league administrators and club board members have not yet been consulted in the process. They they feel that those who are kind of involved in organising leagues and cups and tournaments haven't really had their say yet. And of course, when you're organising a calendar for the whole sport, that they would say that it's, you know, you need to get the opinions of those who are doing the organising as well as those who are playing. So there's a lot of ill feeling around this, I sense. And we've not heard much publicly from those who are on the advisory panel. And in terms of the next steps, I don't think it's been officially decided as to whether it will go to a vote, but I think everyone is anticipating that all the FIFA members of the national associations who are members of FIFA will eventually get to vote on this for both the men's and the women's game. And yeah,
interesting. Anita, I'm keen to know what your thoughts are on what Tom's saying.
Yeah, Tom, I'm just keen to know, you know, how equal is the representation from maybe some of the smaller ranked nations in this whole discussion?
Well, that's a really important point, because the vast majority of the people who have been consulted are perhaps from Europeans and America. I believe there's only one representative from Asia, Sun Wen, the former China player. So it's quite North America heavily focused, I think it's fair to say, which I guess you can understand to an extent in the sense that Jill Ellis is in charge. But there are definitely people around the world who feel it's not particularly inclusive as a process. And I should stress as well, there's also a referee who's been consulted on this, Viviana Steinhaus-Webb, obviously hugely respected. And Dawn Scott is adding a sort of sports science perspective. But I think it's important to stress here that there's people all around the sport feel that FIFA are going to do what they want to do on this, no matter what everyone's opinions are. I've not yet spoken to any sort of source or contact in the sport who can say they think it's a good idea, except for those who are involved at FIFA. And one thing that staggered me, Siobhan, from Jill Ellis' comments last week was she said that the group had not discussed the Olympics as part of their proposals for the new calendar, which I found to be really, really strange. The explanation for that was given that because there isn't any talk about events that FIFA can control, and that's an IOC event. But surely when you're factoring in a calendar, you have to think about how it fits around the Olympics, which is obviously a huge spectacle for the women's game.
Well, I wonder, Tom, is that something that they could do? Could they pull the women's Olympics? You know, could they withdraw the countries from that?
Well, I don't know if that's going to happen, to be honest with you, but Jill Ellis was quite critical of the Olympic format. She said that with only 12 women's teams, it wasn't big enough. She felt that it needed to be expanded and almost sort of slightly through for a little bit of shade towards the Olympic women's football competition as not being inclusive enough. I think, and some people may have heard the IOC's comments a couple of weeks ago criticising FIFA's proposal to go to biannual World Cups. Clearly, events like the Olympic football competition and the continental competitions like the Euros and Copa America and all that sort of thing, all of those competition organisers are going to think that this is hugely conflicting, because anything that increases the frequency of the World Cup is going to hit their exposure, their TV deals, their calendar as well. So, you can understand why there are so many people who are against it.
Yeah, Anita, I want to ask you about that then. What would you rather see? Would you rather, you know, a biennial World Cup and, you know, Olympics just being a smaller part of what it is just now for the women's game? Or would you rather keep it as it is?
I mean, for me personally, I'd rather keep it as it is. I think the idea of a biennial World Cup in the context of which it's formulated potentially could be a good idea for other regions in the world, for smaller ranked nations to play up against each other and have more of that, elite level playing spectacle that they're not used to. Perhaps, you know, if you think about widening the game and development in other areas. But in general, I just think I can see it actually making the gap wider between the top ranked nations who are having better quality in the domestic leagues they have anyway compared to the rest of the world.
Yeah, and let's be real as well. You know, the league is grown as it is at the moment, as is the women's game. But can we keep up? Can the women's game just now keep up with the World Cup every 2 years?
I personally, you know, this is my theory, is that a majority of players are playing at their clubs more than they're at their national teams. And if they are not going to have the kind of welfare and care medically that's going to even allow them to be robust enough to play elite level tournament football that often, then it's not going to be worthwhile at all.
Yeah, that's the thing that worries me. We've already just heard from Northern Ireland, who don't even have all of their players actually full-time professional yet, never mind being exposed at a World Cup every 2 years until they've actually been given that time to catch up with the game anyway. That seems unfair.
Yeah, definitely. I just think, you know, fundamentally, we want to make the domestic game as good a product as we can on and off the pitch. And if the support is there and the resources are there, the players are definitely going to keep getting better. The quality on the pitch is going to be better. And they, you know, physically are going to be physically able, but mentally able. But I think for me, it's just sad to see. I feel like a large chunk of players are being left out of the conversation, both across the men and women's game, with regards to how they feel about what they can cope with.
Yeah, I mean, what would be far more interesting would be to see the players get to vote and see what they get to vote on. It's their bodies at the end of the day, it's their lives, it's everything that they're going through. If it were to go to a vote now, Anita, and you were to vote for the biennial World Cup, are you yes or you no?
Absolute no.
I'm glad you're not sitting on the fence with us tonight. Tom, what would you go for?
Well, it will be a no from me as well. And just to add to what Anita was just saying there, I think it's really important to look at some of the players who are in red hot form at the moment across men's and women's football. And the three that come to mind for me right now, as well, aside from Mo Salah, is Beth Mead and Pernille Harder. And none of those three were a major tournament this summer. So that's something to think about in terms of keeping players fresh and getting the best out of the best players.
Oh, I like what you've brought to the table there, Tom. Tom Gary from The Telegraph, thank you very much for your thoughts on that and this biennial World Cup that may well actually happen. Anita, thank you very much. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. We're back in just a minute. My name's Shabana Hearn. And coming up, we're going to be picking our Player of the Month and previewing this weekend's FA Cup semi-finals. Hello there, how are you? You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the UK's only national radio show dedicated to women's football. My name's Shabana Hearn, Anita Asante from Aston Villa here as well. And Anita, it's time to look back at some of the Women's Super League's Player of the Month with now.
Women's Football Weekly Preview on TalkSport 2 with a Now Sports membership. Stream weekly weekend matches from the Women's Super League live without a contract from just $9.99. Search Now Sports 18 plus, stream via internet, terms apply.
Now, we do this every single month and we look at our player of the month and our goal of the month. And this one is quite similar to what happened last month as well. In there, we've got Katie McCabe from Arsenal, Kim Little from Arsenal, Hannah Blundell from Manchester United, Hasegawa from West Ham, Frank Kirby from Chelsea and Christy Lavelle from Leicester as well. Anita, let's go through some of these, shall we? Because starting off with Katie McCabe, it's been a lovely, strong start to the season from her, hasn't it?
Yeah, an unbelievable season. And, you know, I've been on the wrong end of Katie McCabe actually scoring worldies against us. So, yeah, she's obviously, you know, flying and she's scoring some unbelievable goals and is a positive impact player and a key player for Arsenal as well.
Yeah, two appearances, two goals, and those two goals actually that she's had are both up for goal of the month as well, and an assist as well. And often what we've seen from Arsenal this season is the rotation in the squad, and Katie has been moved around a couple of times. What do you think about, you know, in terms of that as a player and being so versatile?
Well, I think it's a great thing to have in your armour as a player, actually, because you can always be considered for the squad every weekend. But, you know, you can fill any spot at any given moment. And she's been able to adapt in many positions and actually, you know, play, you know, quality football in all positions. So she's also getting a wider knowledge of the roles and responsibilities in each position.
Jonas Edeval had a brilliant start to the season so far. Kim Little has played most minutes under him so far this season. She's had two goals in the last month and two appearances as well. Kim does seem to have had a wee relight of fire, would you say that?
Relight of fire. I don't know if she ever lost it, but yeah.
I know. But she had a wee bit of injury, didn't she, last season that I think she was kind of here and there. But now it feels that she's back and she's full throttle.
Yeah, I would agree. I think obviously injuries can be a slight setback, but getting that rhythm, you know, she's having consistent appearances, playing all the time, and she's got such incredible game intelligence and, you know, a wonderful player on the ball. And you can see the difference she makes for Arsenal when she's in there. So yeah, she's had a great start to the season, and you know, I just hope against us again she'll have a quiet day.
Just have one off. Let's talk about Hannah Blundell as well. 2 appearances and 3 assists. How crucial is she to Manchester United squad?
Yeah, well, I think she's been a great acquisition for Man United. I've played with Hannah. You know, I'm a big fan of Hannah as well. I think she's a sort of a finesse fullback, if you can say that. Quality on the ball and likes to get up and down the pitch. And you can see how she's having that influence at Man United. And I think playing more regularly now is really helping her to have confidence and actually show her quality.
Hasegawa from West Ham, she had a screamer of a goal as well this month, from 2 appearances, 1 goal and 1 assist. Have we got plenty more to see from her moving forward?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I think Hasegawa, you know, is new to the league. She's probably still adjusting to the transition of being here, learning about her teammates, the coach, and how she can fit into a role within the team. But, you know, the quality she's displayed in her finishing shows that she's got plenty more to show and to come.
And I don't know about you, Anita, but sometimes you look forward to a season, looking back from last season, and you wonder if a certain player will still continue to provide at the level that they've been providing at. And the person I'm thinking about is Fran Kirby, and she hasn't lost a beat over the summer. And of course, she's doing it again this season for Chelsea, 2 appearances, 1 goal and 3 assists. There's no stopping her at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Fran is a sort of player that I just think, you know, she loves football, and the minute she's on the pitch, she's at home. And she displays that week in and week out. And I just think, you know, whether she's scoring goals or assisting, she's just got, you know, she's an all-rounder attacking player, and you'll always see her show up, especially in important matches.
Yeah, that's always saving the day. Of course, up there as well is Pernilla Harder. She seems to be doing that for Chelsea at the moment, is just getting those last-minute goals or turning that game around from getting the goals. And the other person we have to mention as well, of course, is Kirsty Lavelle, Leicester goalkeeper. In 2 appearances, she's saved 14, which is, you know, pretty credible.
Yeah, I mean, goalkeepers don't always get the credit they deserve, do they? They keep their teams in the games most of the time. And, you know, making that many saves for her team shows just how important and crucial she'll be to their, you know, to the team and their season, because ultimately they're new to the league as well, Leicester, as a side. And it's going to be important that they're able to have as many clean sheets as they can get.
I think it was that game actually against Chelsea that she was just outstanding just a couple of weeks ago. Kirsty Lavelle, so nice to see her up for Player of the Month. Anita, I have to ask, anybody missing from the list? Anyone you would have liked to have seen up there?
I mean, there's always an argument that, you know, the likes of a Sam Kerr or someone could be in that list. But no, I think that's a pretty solid list. And actually, I had a hard time trying to pick between them.
Yeah. Yeah. Who did you go for in the end?
Well, it was a close one between Little and Katie McCabe. I had to go with McCabe, and maybe that's the defender in me as well, wanting to give credit to players that play in defensive positions. But I think for her ability, obviously, to be an amazing fullback and a winger often at times, she can assist, she scores goals, and she obviously does a great job defending. So for me, it has to be Katie McCabe this season, especially scoring 2 incredible goals.
Okay, Anita Santi going for Katie McCabe of Barclays Women's Super League Player of the Month. That was our Player of the Month of the Women's Super League with Now. And don't forget, with a Now Sports membership, you can stream the Women's Super League live on Sky Sports without a contract. Search Now Sports.
Women's Football Weekly Preview on TalkSport 2 with a Now Sports membership. Stream weekly weekend matches from the Women's Super League live without a contract from just $9.99. Search Now Sports 18+. Stream via internet. Terms apply.
And let's talk about the FA Cup semi-finals, all coming up this weekend. On Sunday, we've got Manchester City against Chelsea at 2:45. So let's start there, Anita. This is a big game for Gareth Taylor, isn't it? Because they've talked about pressure on somebody, eh?
Yeah, massive, massive clash. Man City obviously haven't had the best of starts to the season, and they would want to redeem something probably by getting to a final. And this is an opportunity for them to try and do that. But yeah, there's definitely going to be a lot of pressure on Gareth and the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chelsea, of course, as we know, just on that run of form. Since the opening game of the season, they haven't been beat at all and seem to be putting the goals away as well. If you could predict this game, what do you think would be the score?
Oh,
sorry. I know. You're like, I'm still trying to have my career right now. Shush, woman.
Thanks for that, Siobhan. I think Chelsea, it's just, for me, the two strongest sides this season are Chelsea and Arsenal. And I just think Chelsea have slightly more edge. So I'm going to go for a 2-0 result for Chelsea.
I have to ask Anita as well, are you keen to see Manchester City utilise the younger players a little bit more during this injury crisis that they're having? I'm talking, you know, for the likes of Ruby Mace. Would you like to see her now get her start?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this is a sort of, you could say, an opportunity that has been forced upon the manager as well. Mm-hmm. So why not actually give the chance to see if your youngsters will just fly or not? You know, the team has not had the best starts to the season anyway. It's just a chance to see as many players and see what they can offer. And maybe, you know, because they know the slight pressure off, because, you know, sometimes when you're at the top and you're fighting for that league title, whatever, there's a different kind of pressure. Now they can go and play with a bit more freedom and really, you know, impact the team in a positive way.
Yeah, we were speaking to Rachel Brown-Finnis just last week and she was saying as well, you know, this is the time to use those players and get them out there and see what they can provide, especially when you do have that injury crisis as well. So I would quite like to see Ruby Mace and see what she can do for Manchester City, hopefully this weekend in the FA Cup semi-final. And your other game on Sunday at 5:45 is Arsenal against Brighton. Anita, you said it there, Arsenal so strong this season under Jonas Edeval, but let's not forget Hope Powell's side started so strong as well.
Yeah, Brighton are always a difficult side to come up against. They're always well organised, disciplined, work really hard for each other, make it very difficult for, you know, top sides to break them down. But I think, you know, Arsenal have started the season in unbelievable form. They're scoring a lot of goals and there's a lot more depth to the squad. So I still think Arsenal will, you know, win this game.
Mm. What do you think will be the score? Predict it for me.
Oh, well, you know, I actually, you know, Brighton are a very robust side. So I can imagine I'm going to go for a 3-0 scoreline.
Ooh, OK. And you forget as well, of course, that it was Brighton who stopped Chelsea in their unbeaten run last season as well. And Chelsea being Aston Villa's return from the international break as well. Anita, looking forward to that game?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we always want to play the top sides and that's how we improve as a side. That's how we get better and that's how we learn. Mm-hmm. We know what Chelsea have to offer and all their strengths within the side. But we're looking forward to just getting the season, you know, the games kicked off again and getting to some momentum again.
Yeah, no, that'll be it. And just get back into that good run. And then before you know it, it's another international break. Do you feel that, Anita, that you're getting into the run of things and then there's another break? Does that annoy you?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, as a player, you want to be on the grass all the time with your team and planning, prepping for games. So yeah, it's not, we actually don't enjoy these periods that much. We want the season to just keep on rolling.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, it's even annoying for me not be able to watch the Women's Super League when it's international breaks. But hey-ho, that's why we get behind the internationals and hopefully we're going to see England and Scotland at the World Cup next year. That's me being really, really neutral. Anita, I have to say thank you so much for your company tonight. You've been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Siobhan. Enjoy it.
Lovely. Thank you so much to our guests tonight. And don't forget, UEFA Euro 2022 draw is on Thursday in Manchester. Producer Flo is going to be that for us, providing updates throughout the evening. It's going to be live for you on TalkSport. You do not want to miss that. That's all from us tonight. Thank you so much to Anita Asante, Rebecca Holloway, Motherwell's Leanne Crichton, Tom Garry and Producer Flo as well. And all of you, as ever, for listening. And do not forget, if you've missed any of the show, you can download the Women's Football Weekly podcast via the TalkSport app.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.